Brother Booker Dawji, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Why are you laughing?
No, I'm just thinking about you as I'm putting my roller skates on to go down the Spingo Hills.
Your roller skates?
Yes.
The ones that you put underneath your wheelchair?
You hear about it on Facebook, Malana.
The story that caught your eye this week.
Dear listeners, let me be absolutely clear about two things. Firstly, when it comes to religion, I am not one to worry too much about what or who people worship. After all, they are, according to Wikipedia, at least 4,200 religions or belief systems in the world. Now, my main worry is where I myself am going to end up when I get to the other side. That's enough to give me sleepless nights. Yes, of course, I will very respectfully tell or engage someone who is interested about the wonderful teachings of Islam. But hey, if you insist on bowing to the sun or trees or something like that, then, well, good luck to you. And my second point is this, dear listeners. I'm a very sensitive and sensible person, and it's not in my nature to upset you, especially when it comes to the highlight of your life today, that Dal Gosht session, variously known as Dal Chawal or Dar Khao. Dear listeners, I have no intention to spoil your dal and rice today. Hence, it's advisable that sensitive listeners switch off right now. So, what has religion got to do with your lunch, I hear you ask? So let me tell you, last week was a very important anniversary in Spain, a religious anniversary. This is what the British Telegraph newspaper said. Every year, hundreds of people gather on the last Sunday of January in the Galician town of El Puig to celebrate the life of Saint Peter Nolasco, a 13th century figure remembered for buying back Christian slaves from Moorish raiders. So how do they celebrate the life of Saint Peter Nolasco? They have big bowls of steaming rice and beans. And in the streets, they all gather and they throw dead rats at each other. Did you get that? They throw dead rats at each other. No one knows why they do this. But according to the Telegraph, it may have been because the pests would climb inside tasty treats around the town as they were being prepared for the festival. But everyone knows the protocol, the procedure when one is hit by an aerial rat. Pick it up and throw it straight back. Locals claim the rats are a nuisance and say they are killed humanely before being frozen and saved for the big day. Can you believe it? They kill them and they freeze them and save it for this big festival. The practice was banned in 2012 as a breach of Spanish animal welfare laws, but carries on anyway. However, this year, a campaign group has released a video of the festival calling for the tradition to end once and for all. And the video shows rats being hurled by their tails as crowds chant, "Rat, rat, rat." Well, the video is on the Telegraph website. I saw it. It's absolutely disgusting. If you write the word Telegraph and rats into Google, you can also watch it if you want to. So as I was saying, I don't like to pick on anyone's religious beliefs, but throwing dead gundans at each other is quite a weird festival. And my dear sisters, please, be nice, okay? Don't you dare mention the story to the buddy just as he is dishing out the soji today. And don't say, "Hey, the story is true. See, I got the video here right on my cell phone." Don't be cruel, okay? Still on the topic of religion, in Minnesota, in the good old U.S. of A., a church told an 84-year-old lady that she cannot be buried next to her husband because she didn't attend church services. Now listen to this. If I can get this thing going. Darlene Pollack, 84 years old, has been a member of St. Mark's Lutheran Church for 5 decades, but recently stopped attending because she has developed disagreements with the congregation. Regardless of that, she has already paid for the burial plot beside her husband on church grounds. He died some time ago. The church wrote a letter to her. He says, "Since you have ignored our efforts to reach you and you have failed to return to your Lord Jesus in the divine service to receive from him the gifts of his word and holy supper given from God to us that we may have forgiveness and life, you have self-excluded. Scripture is clear about those who remain in unrepentance. Your soul is in mortal danger. You have self-excluded. You are no longer eligible to be buried at either of the church's 2 cemeteries. So there you are, listeners. 2 wonderful stories about religion to make you scratch your heads in disbelief.
U.S. elections.
Right.
Pronunciation and spelling is important.
I am very sad indeed, Maulana, very sad. Ted Cruz trumped Donald. I really wanted this cartoon character to win. Imagine this clown running the world's so-called superpower, especially because he believes that the whole world revolves around him. He's got an ego the size of the Empire State Building. And please, especially you, Maulana, please don't think I'm jealous, but hey, I prefer my own hairstyle than the mongoose that Donald has on his head. No comment, please, right?
What hairstyle? And you can only have a hairstyle if you've got a hair. Unless you've got a Rajbansi wig.
Stop that, Maulana. Stop that.
Okay.
This is a family program. And things are really hotting up. The race for the presidency is now showing how some of the candidates are doing so badly that many of them have dropped off. So on the Republican side, there are just 3 to look out for. Ted Cruz, Trump, and Marco Rubio. Now, the Telegraph had this headline. What was the saddest moment of the U.S. elections, of the whole U.S. election campaign? And then it explained. Jeb Bush, the brother of my friend Shrub, made a very fiery and passionate speech to a crowd in New Hampshire. He said, "I think the next president needs to send the signal that we are prepared to act in the national security interest of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world." And how did the crowd react to these powerful words, Maulana? They responded with absolute silence. And Jeb Bush looked at them very sheepishly and said, "Please clap." What a first-class mampara. I wish I was there to see the silly look on his face when he was greeted with silence. What a loser. On the Democratic side, it's a 2-horse race now, Maulana. Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. In Iowa, she and Sanders finished off getting almost the same number of votes, as you all know. So they are neck and neck, and in a few days' time, the vote will be taken in New Hampshire, and Sanders looks like he will win there. And I really hope that he beats Hillary and becomes president. He's a nice guy, and he's quite an intelligent guy compared to the rest in the race. He voted against the Iraq war. Hillary Clinton voted for it. He is for the poor people and against the power of the big corporations. Hillary is for big business. In fact, Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, and Morgan Stanley and other Wall Street corporations gladly paid her $2.9 million just for giving a speech. You know, she gave a couple of speeches to them. For a one-hour speech, she was paid $250,000. She said, well, you know, the people said, how can you be paid $250,000? And she replied, well, they wanted to know my views about the world. What a joke. Actually, they were simply buying a politician who will smile on them if she becomes president. And so far, they have donated $15 million to her campaign. Now, Sanders is quite an old bully. He's 74 years old. And here's the remarkable thing. He has been attracting young people, and especially because he's very sincere. He's very straightforward, and he's for the poor people. He's for educating the youth, and he is not getting money from big business. Just ordinary people are collecting money and sending to him, and he's making a lot of money for his campaign, just like those early days when Obama was standing for elections and all the young people rallied around him. Anyway, the debates between Hillary and Bernie Sanders have been very vigorous and robust, but very respectful. They deal with the issues, not getting all personal. On the Republican side, the debates have been hot and personal and sometimes quite ridiculous. Many issues are discussed, but the main whipping boy, of course, is Islam and Muslims. Republicans are not shy in insulting Muslims in the most vicious way. And some of the statements are ignorant and plain stupid. Outside a rally in support of Trump, a crowd of his supporters was asked by a TV, I saw this the other day, was asked by a TV journalist, what is the main issue for you? One woman, some would describe her as trailer trash, said the topic for her, the main concern for her in all of these issues is the Muslims. And the reporter said, what do you mean? And she replied, the Muslims. The Muslims want to kill us. And the reporter asked, all the Muslims want to kill you? And she said, yes. If you think that's stupid, listen to this. A Republican congressman on Wednesday was motivating for passing a law to cut terrorists from getting social benefits. This is what he said. State Republican Ken Wyler said in a written testimony submitted to a state house committee, he said, you may hear from some opposition to this bill, but I must remind you that in the Muslim religion, the word taqiyya describes how its adherents are expected to lie to non-believers to advance their cause. I say cause rather than religion because this is an ideology posing as a religion. Islam is intolerant and deceitful, and its adherents are ordered to overthrow our way of life and to replace it with Sharia law. Now, he also says, giving public benefits to any person or family that practices Islam is aiding and abetting the enemy. That is treason. This lawmaker argued that Muslim fanatics were responsible for every terrorist act of the past 20 years and referenced the Boston Marathon attack of 2013, saying that one of the culprits, in his words, put his wife on public benefits, on social benefits. If he had to support his family, he might have had more devotion to his job and not to bomb buildings and radicalizing his brother. Wow. Imagine that. So, dear listeners, hate speech has now gone mainstream in the United States. It's acceptable to insult Muslims and Islam openly. Yes, openly. Top politicians do it. Presidential candidates do it. You see it in the media. You see it on TV, radio, newspapers. The right-wing Republicans supporting Fox News, or should we say false news, this week had, as usual, a panel discussion on Muslims. Let me read this. A panel on Fox News asserted this week that immigrants named Muhammad should be banned from the U.S. because Muslims are already infested, have already infested neighborhoods in Europe. On Wednesday's edition of Outnumbered, Fox News host Jean Pirot said that she was disgusted at reports of Muslim men groping European women. According to Pirot, everyone named Muhammad should be barred from entering the United States, even if there was no evidence of a criminal record. She says, what are you going to do? Call 1-800 and say, look, I got this guy named Muhammad here, and he says he doesn't have a criminal record. Let's let him into San Francisco. No, 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 no. Dear listeners, see what I mean? That's what my friend Donald Trump said. Keep the Muslims out of the United States. At least with Trump, you get what you see. Straight talker, lots of money, but no brains. And he doesn't fake it. George Bush, on the other hand, tried hard to look intelligent. Let me repeat, let me tell you two stories that I like to repeat. Old man Bush, who used to be president, said to his son George, my boy, I believe you want to be the president of the United States of America. And George replied, yes, Dad, I do. And the old man replied, well, my boy, you have to have certain qualities. You got to have integrity, honesty, compassion, empathy, and humility. If you can fake all of that, you can be president of the United States. Here's a second story, which I like to repeat. 6 months after Obama became president, an old man walked up to the gates of the White House. A soldier was standing guard. The bully asked the soldier, is George Bush in? And the soldier replied, no, sir, he left 6 months ago. 1 week later, the old man came back. Is George Bush in? And the soldier said, no, sir, George Bush left 6 months ago. A few days later, the old man returned. Same question and got the same answer. This happened 3 or 4 times. One day, the soldier got fed up and he said, sir, you keep asking if George Bush is in, and I keep answering that he left 6 months ago. Why do you keep asking? And the old man very slowly said, son, I'm just making sure. The soldier grinned, clicked his heels to attention, saluted, and said, see you tomorrow, sir. So, dear listeners, on the question of sincerity, I often have mixed feelings about Brother Hussein. This week he visited the Islamic Society of Baltimore Masjid on Tuesday. What did he do there? Well, then one joker sent me this message on WhatsApp. I have to read it to you. He says here, on a brisk February day, President Barack Obama walked into a Baltimore area mosque, swiftly removed his shoes, and headed for the ablution area in a very routine fashion. This is Obama's first visit to an American mosque during his presidency and is part of the administration's push to promote religious tolerance. Imam Abdul Ali of the Baltimore Islamic Community watched the president as he shuffled right past the mosque reception committee and straight to the men's restroom. Ali said, as he recalled his first encounter with the president earlier today, as soon as he entered the mosque, he lowered his gaze, mumbled assalamu alaikum, and headed for the restroom. I could hear him fill up a green plastic jug with water and shut the toilet door, you know, to wash his presidential behind. It's like he's done this every day of his life. After the evening azan, Obama assumed the role of leading the congregation. He was the imam. 34-year-old mosque attendee Tariq Ahmad stood bewildered as he observed Obama easily go through motions of the prayer with an impressive recitation of Quranic passages. Said Ahmad, before he started, he looked back and instructed us to straighten our safs. He said, shoulder to shoulder, pray every salat as if it is your last. You never know when one of my drones can be off by 1 or 2 degrees. Obama recited the entire Surah Yasin during the first half of the prayer, with many congregants floored by his accurate pronunciation and inflection. Oh, I'm trying to get this computer to frozen now. Anyway, he finished by saying that after he had finished, Obama, was still carrying his miswak in hand, went out to the limousine to return to the White House. Some joker sent that to me, Maulana. And now, let me just say this, that of course this is, what I just said now, is not to be taken very seriously. But Obama did go to that masjid, and he did make a wonderful speech. I must be honest, Maulana, it touched me greatly. It was very powerful. He mainly spoke about Islamophobia and how such hate speech is unjust and damaging. He said that Muslims are completely part of U.S. society. I don't want to go into the details, but it was very powerful indeed. Maybe you can see it online. Some commentators say that he was actually attacking the Republican Party and especially Donald Trump. Some say that he couldn't speak too strongly in support of Muslims previously because many in America accused him of secretly being a practicing Muslim, and if he spoke earlier, it would create problems for him as president. But that now that he has a few months left in office, he doesn't care about what people think, and so he made this powerful speech in defense of Muslims. I liked his speech, as I said. Yes, it was the first time that he visited a mosque in his 7 years in office. He visited churches many times, and he gave a big speech at a synagogue last May. But, as one leading Muslim commentator, Mehdi Hassan, said, better late than never. And Mehdi Hassan's analysis of Obama's speech was in my newsletter last night that you all, I'm sure all of you, have received. And if for some strange reason you don't receive my newsletter, drop me a line, abie@iafrica.com, and I will put you on my mailing list. Of course, send full name and email address. And there's only one part of his speech that I didn't like. And of course, you hear this frequently elsewhere also. He made a wonderful speech, but the part that stuck in my throat was, Muslim leaders must do more to condemn these radicals amongst them. Well, my response to that is perhaps Western leaders should do more in stopping the interference in Muslim lands. And you in particular, Obama, stop supporting the Saudi bombardment of Yemen. That country has been reduced right down to this, it's bombed into the 16th century. And all those drone attacks in Afghanistan and elsewhere. So much to talk about. Maybe next week I will tackle the story of an open letter by Mikko Peled. Mikko Peled is, of course, the son of an Israeli general who passed away some time ago. Outspoken guy, I'm sure you've had him on your program, Maulana. And he wrote an open letter to Obama. And one particular thing that he spoke about, that he emphasized, was that before Obama leaves, he must tackle the issue of the Holy Land Foundation, five who are in jail. That is very, very illuminating, Maulana. So, inshallah, I'll tackle it next week.
Inshallah, light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, since it's Juma, I want to stick to the theme of religion, Maulana. One Maulana, you know, our Maulana here in Spingo is very sharp indeed, very sharp. He and a group went for gush. They knocked at the door. A very fed-up-looking character opened it. The Maulana said, "Assalamu alaikum, brother. We would like to invite you to the masjid. There's a very important speaker talking there tonight." And the fellow replied very grumpily, "No, I don't like to go to our masjid. It's full of hypocrites." And Maulana smiled and said, "No problem, brother. There's always place for one more." One more, Maulana?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. And Maulana was walking in Brickfield Road here in Overport. He saw a group of small boys. They had surrounded a cat, small cat, scruffy-looking cat. The Maulana was concerned that they may harm the cat. So he went up to them and he asked what they were doing. And one of the boys said, "This is a stray cat. We all want it, but only one of us can take it home. So we decided to have a contest. Whoever tells the biggest lie can have the cat." Of course, the Maulana was shocked. He gave the boys a 2-minute bayan about lying. Don't you boys know that it is a very big guna to speak lies? And the Maulana finished his bayan by saying, you know, when I was your age, I never spoke a lie. There was silence. Then one small boy said to the other, okay, give the cat to the Maulana.
Okay, let me, as always, Jazakumullah for your time.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
18 minutes to 9. Coming up after the break, the Daily Anecdote with Maulana Ibrahim Daya. Allah